You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Matt Jones here with Ethan Westerman in our studio today. We're going to talk Razorback basketball. We'll talk about Razorback baseball, answer your questions, the Razorback baseball mailbag. We'll also talk a little bit about Razorback football at the end, weekend, but throughout this week, there are some All-Star games that include several former Razorbacks. There's a Razorback tie-in in the Super Bowl that we'll tell you about, and more as we move forward. But first, Razorback basketball, it's not an off week, but it feels like one. It's different in basketball because you play two games a week, and they're not playing the midweek game. That's probably good for this team. They're going to play Kentucky on Saturday, obviously, up at Rupp Arena. Kentucky beat Tennessee last night. And, Ethan, I caught just a little bit of it, but that's an impressive win for Kentucky. And I don't know how that affects Arkansas. I mean, maybe you catch them, on a high note Saturday. I don't suspect Arkansas is going to win this game. Don't get me wrong. But, maybe you're able to make it a little bit more competitive because they're coming off that big road win. But I think I was a little bit surprised that they went into Tennessee and won that game.
Yep. I watched pretty much the entire second half of that game. Kentucky is a really good team. Their guard play is so impressive. They just make plays. But Tennessee, I will say, last night they went through a stretch near the end of the game. They could not throw it in the ocean. It was hard to watch, like just the lack of shot making for them. Mm-hmm. And I was very sold on Tennessee earlier this year, and I'm starting to lose a little bit of that personally. I just think that
they can't shoot.
Yeah,
they've got the Arkansas problem. Yeah. I mean, Arkansas is 16th in the league in shooting. Tennessee is just right there with them at 15th.
And here's the scary thing. Mark Pope, after the game, said something along the lines of, like, yeah, we were willing to give up shots to the guys that, like basically they play the percentages. And, I mean, nobody in the SEC is going to just give up a wide-open look to somebody. But, like a slight contest, like they're going to give up shots to guys that they think should take them. And if you're Arkansas, I'm going into, like, man, they're going to give up. They're going to let some people that they don't think can shoot take some shots, and Arkansas is going to have to make them. They're going to have to make them better than Tennessee did, because that was what doomed them last night. I also just thought in that game, Kentucky did the veteran thing of just, like, they answered every time Tennessee started to make a little bit of a push. It was like Kentucky came up with the big and one, or like the dunk on the other end. They beat them out in transition. They always had a response, so... maybe it'll be a good thing for Arkansas that they're coming off a big high of beating Tennessee, but I'm not really a believer in that usually. I think that if a team is playing well and gaining confidence, you just don't want to run into them.
There's all this talk this week about all the different people with Arkansas ties going back to Kentucky. Obviously, it starts with Calipari, but you've got a lot of assistant coaches who were in Lexington previously. You've got the players. You've got Avisic. You've got Duke Thiroux. You've got DJ Wagner. Getting overlooked a little bit, I feel like, is the fact that Arkansas is going to see one of its old players, Jackson Robinson, and he had a really good game last night at Tennessee, almost led Kentucky in scoring, had 17 points, hit a big free throw late, went 1-for-2 from the line, but he played a pretty solid game for them, and it feels like, as I have watched them this year, I have been surprised at how much his game has grown since we saw him here.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it last year watching him at BYU. He was so young when he got here. I think he started college at Texas A&M at like 17. And so he was just – it's like his body needed to catch up with just the physicality and stuff. And now he just is like an SEC-built guard, and he's always been a natural shooter. I mean, he's got one of the prettiest shots I've seen in a while, at Arkansas at least. He's the type of player, if you give him open space, he is going to make you pay. And so Arkansas is going to have to play its best defensive game of the year against these guys on the perimeter. You cannot be giving them just great looks. And then Brandon Garrison inside is a force. I mean, they're just a well-rounded team, in my opinion. They play a fun style, a good pace. Arkansas is going to have a really good, closeout defense. But also just be, I think they're going to have to be pretty just sound, like all over. It's not going to be one thing that you can pinpoint with Kentucky of like, oh, beat them on the perimeter game and you're going to win. You're going to have to just play a solid all around game. They're a good team.
John Calipari had his radio show Monday night out at Sassy's off of Weddington Drive in Fayetteville. Talked about what practice looks like this week for the Razorbacks. And this is what he had to say.
We got to get more in rhythm together. And probably to a point where we'll scrimmage and I'm going to stand up top because I want them to be empowered. The greatest thing that happened in the Georgia game, greatest thing, DJ said, what do you want? What do you want to run? And I said, let's run top. And I said, hey, guys, he said, coach, I got it. I'll do it. And that's when I can sit down. That means they're beginning to be empowered. And that is so important. Road games, it's important that they're empowered because you can't, they can't hear you. The games are sold out. The people are going nuts. And they got to be together.
You know, you listen to Calipari throughout his radio show on Monday, and you wouldn't know that it's a team that's 1-6 in the SEC. Say whatever you want to about, you know, his coaching this year, and all the, you know, everything's up for criticism and critique. But he's got an ability to stay positive that I have seen other times when teams have gone through these types of seasons that you didn't see that type of positivity emanating from the head coach. I don't know what that means for the rest of the year, but it is something that stands out to me as being unique.
Yeah, well, I mean, the past week for them, I know they get beat by Oklahoma, and that was a real downer of a loss because it was a game that you felt like if Arkansas wins it, they're on to something with the two-game winning streak. But, you know, result, it wasn't what they got. But I think that anybody could agree that last week, both of their games, they just played a little bit better.
I feel like they may have found something about themselves.
Yeah.
Basically being that in order to win the games, you're going to have to get down in the mud and do it ugly.
Yeah, and I think that also without Boogie Fland, the Jonnell Davis is finally like, he just, I think, is feeling like you have to be a, you have to be one of the guys. And say what you want, the final shot against Oklahoma was terrible. Should have given it up. It was out of control. Not a good shot. Other than that, he played probably his best game in a while. I don't know if I'd say on the year, but he shot well. He made the shot that tied the game at 62. I think he's gaining a little bit of maybe confidence. It's just a matter of, you know, just settling in and really maybe finally getting the chance to be the guy, if that makes sense, like from a scoring standpoint at least.
That's a good segue. Hey, Sydney, if you'll have clip three pulled up, I'm going to go out of order here for a second. John Calipari talked about Davis and that end of game play against Oklahoma the other day. You know, he had 18 points. The perimeter shooting is not good from him right now. And I almost feel like if they would maybe have him scale back a little bit on his three-point shots. You know, don't take 10, maybe take 6. You know, maybe they get more production out of him if he's putting the ball on the floor and trying to go to the basket or maybe, you know, taking some shorter pull-up shots. I don't know. But it was interesting to hear Calipari's thoughts on Nelly and on the final play because you didn't really get this kind of insight, I feel like, after the game. This is something that you're going to hear from a coach after they've had a couple of days to digest how it all went down.
You know, the last play, I went at Nelly purposely. And because my thought was, you know what, I'm going to let him make this play. He's going to win this game. Something good's going to happen, and he can break through. We need him to break through. And it didn't happen that way, but just so you understand, I trust him. And I told him, I have faith in you or I wouldn't have run that for you.
So, I mean, with this team, with Fland not playing, you know, we don't know when Boogie will be back, if he'll be back at all this year. Like, if they're going to have any measure of success, they've got to get Nelly Davis playing maybe not to the level that he played at FAU because I don't think anybody's expecting that anymore. But they got to get something between what he's been and what he was. And I do feel like the game against Oklahoma was maybe a step in the right direction. We'll see if he can do that multiple games because that's what happens a lot of times. You'll see somebody like, okay, there it is, but you may not see it a whole lot. And you know, so the question becomes with him, can he stack performances? I think that'll be key for this team.
Yep. And I'm all with Calipari that the final play, the way that game had been going, I think Jonnell Davis, it was right to get the ball in his hands. He had been, I mean, I think he led him in scoring.
18, yeah, he did.
But, yeah, it was just one of those plays that, you know, he just has to read it better and read the – I mean, maybe he also thought that he would got bumped going up and thought he was going to get to the foul line because it looked like there was definitely some contact, so who knows. But, yeah, it was – I don't – I don't argue the final play that him having the ball in his hands, but I think that, yeah, the more that he gets kind of comfortable in that role of like, hey, there shouldn't be a lot of pressure on you to like have to, I don't know, be somebody that you aren't, because look at the depth right now. You're not going anywhere. You're going to be on the court. Like, you are. Jonnell Davis will be a big part of this team the rest of the year, unless, you know, barring he's out for injury or whatever. But like, he's gonna have to step up, and there shouldn't be the pressure of, are one of, you know, these end of the bench guys going to come take my spot. He's going to be on the court. He's got to just get comfortable and just keep stacking performances, like you said.
You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Razorback sports analysis, latest and recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We expect some news this afternoon related to the basketball reseeding plan at Bud Walton Arena. So be on the lookout on our website this afternoon. We think that there might be some news as it relates to that. Certainly that'll be a big topic of conversation moving forward. Once we have details, we'll talk about that here on our podcast. Arkansas 1-6 in the SEC. You know, there's just not a lot of positive vibes around the program right now. I mean, it feels like people are, when does baseball start? When is basketball over? When do these two McDonald's All-Americans for next year get on campus? It's always, you know, very forward-thinking whenever the season's not going well. Calipari got asked a question, and he references it in the clip you're about to hear, but it was after the game the other night, and it was basically, how do you keep the players from, you know, jumping ship, holding on to the rope, you know, things like that? And this is what he had to say about the losing and about some of the conversations that he's had in one-on-one meetings with the players in the last few days.
Me, even though, yes, it starts beating you down because the losing. And that's why you want to break through. For them, because they're working so hard, they got to see some success along the way. And that's, you know, someone said, well, you know, they may let go of the rope. We lost 5 in a row and they didn't let go of the rope. So we got good kids. They're fighting for you. They're fighting for me and our staff. They're playing for each other. They want to win. They made some unbelievable comments. I left the individual meetings. They made me feel better.
I mean, it's interesting to hear that. Again, it goes back to the positivity and the fact that maybe, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for here? Maybe the feeling in the building is better than the feeling outside the building. And again, we'll see how that, you know, how that looks in a week and a half after they play at Kentucky and at Texas and Alabama and Bud Walton. The feeling may not be so, you know, so great if you're 1-9 after that stretch of games. But who knows? Maybe if there is that togetherness, like he, you know, seems to allude to here, maybe they go steal one somewhere. I don't know where you do that, but I don't know if it'd surprise me.
It's just, I mean, take out Tennessee, Missouri. They got beat pretty handily in both of those. They've been in every single, like, yeah. It's not like you're looking up at the scoreboard at the end
it's
of the game.
It's not like women's basketball.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a totally different
story.
But
no, but it's they've got a similar record.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to look at Arkansas men's basketball right now and women's basketball, I think that a lot of people would say, well, you know, they're the same teams.
Yeah, and see, this is
the women's basketball has lost 5 or 6 games by 30-plus points, yeah. Whereas the men have only not been in 2.
Yeah, the men's hope is we're in all these games, we can win them. The women's hope right now is the bottom of the SEC isn't as strong as the bottom of it in the men's side, where they have some games on their schedule, like this one coming up tomorrow for them against Texas A&M that they could win. Mm. So it's different sources where you're getting your hope for both those teams. But for the men, I think that it's, you know, either way, you have the same record, and that's what matters, and so I'm curious to see, you know, if the men can start stealing some. And, you know, all it takes is just stacking wins. I think I've said it since they started their losing streak. Like, all it takes is start stacking some wins somewhere, and I know that sounds super daunting when you've seen a team that loses a lot more than it wins in conference play, but people said the same thing about a lot of Eric Musselman's teams. Like, just it was doom and gloom, and then somewhere along the way they figure it out. My worry with the Arkansas men's team is this year is that they've figured it out. They'll figure it out too late. That's what I think might happen.
Yeah, my concern with them, they can't score. I think that's the big concern with them, because if you can score and defense is the problem, then I feel like that is more fixable than if you can't score. And maybe you have, you know, they're, say what you want to about their defense, but they're holding teams to, you know, points most games that are going to give them a chance to win. It's just they can't take advantage of it because they can put the ball through the hoop.
Yeah, the defense is keeping them in games. So we'll see how, if they can pick up their offense along the way. It's just, yeah, it's one of those deals where if you're not, you're going to have to break through at some point and start scoring the ball a little bit better.
You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple or Spotify. Just search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version on our YouTube page, Whole Hog Sports YouTube. And we post it every day to our Facebook and Twitter pages as well. When we come back, we've got some baseball questions that we're going to answer. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas baseball will be back on the field, we think, you know, weather permitting, on Friday. For their fourth of nine preseason scrimmages. They had three last weekend. We asked our subscribers on our message board at wholehogsports.com for their questions about this year's baseball team, and we'll answer some of those now. Sydney Mulvannon, our producer, has got the questions, and she'll read them off. Sydney, what do we got?
All right. Our first question comes from Eldo Hogg, who asks, assuming everyone is healthy, which pitchers do you think will make the 27-man roster?
Well, this is tough. Now, keep in mind that you've got a 40-man roster for the regular season. The 27-man roster is once SEC play rolls around. So anybody who's on the 40-man can be included on the 27-man. You have to turn in that 27-man roster the night before your first game of an SEC series. And then your players for that weekend series have to come from that 27-man roster. So, you know, if there's an injury or something like that, you can't take somebody off and put somebody on. You have to pick a 27-man roster that you think is going to give you the best chance to win that weekend. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I keep coming back to there are a handful of pitchers who I think you see will undoubtedly be in the – you're on the 27-man roster. And, you know, obviously you've got your starting candidates, those being, you know, right-hander Gabe Gackel, right-hander Gage Wood. You've got left-handers who are in the starting conversation, Zach Root, who I think will be a starter. I think Gackel will be one too for sure. And then I think the last one's between Wood and Landon Beinelsee. So, you know, certainly you've got those four would be in there. How many pitchers do you take? I think, you know, some of that – It comes down to a matter of preference for a team, but I think typically you're going to take somewhere around 13 to 14 pitchers on your SEC roster. And then, you know, after that, I think Carson Wiggins, I think Cole Gibler, those are a couple of freshmen. I think that they are going to be in the conversation to pitch meaningful weekends on the – or meaningful innings on the weekend. I think Christian Fouch is your closer. I think you take Will McIntyre with you wherever you go because – there's a lot of value in having someone who can give you long relief like he can. If Colin Fisher is healthy, I think he's in that conversation. If Hunter Dietz is healthy, I think he's in that conversation. I like what I saw the other day from Parker Coyle. I thought he was one of the more impressive pitchers in that first weekend of scrimmaging. So that gives you a lot of pitchers right there. And then, you know, you have to pick from Tate McGuire. You have to pick from Ben Bibee, from Dylan Carter, from Aiden Jimenez, who is a transfer from Oregon State. The good news for this team is they got options, Ethan, and that's better than I think some teams who, you know, you get. I think some teams you get into a situation of like, oh God, how are we going to get to a 13 or 14 man pitching staff for the weekend? This one, it's kind of a similar deal, but it's because you have so many who I think are quality type pitchers. How do you narrow that down, and who do you choose can't go?
Yeah, and I always am interested to see the moment that a weekend starts not going the way you want it to pitching. I feel like in baseball, it's the teams that have the best, you know, it's just who has the best depth behind you that can, you know, somebody can come in who you weren't expecting to, maybe not expecting to come in and have a great performance, and they carry you through some valuable innings and get you to the next day. That's what I love about baseball watching, is it's all the time about, like, playing the long game, like thinking about on Friday what helps me on Sunday. I like that.
Another thing that I think probably, you know, if you are on the fence, so to speak, about whether or not you get to make that weekend roster, how do you recycle as a pitcher? Like, are you not nearly as good the second time than you are the first time? That can make a difference, because like you said, starting pitching, if you get a bad weekend from starting pitching, all of a sudden you might have to have 20 plus innings from your bullpen. And there aren't a lot of staffs that are built to do that. And so if you've got some recyclable pitchers that are in there, certainly it helps on those weekends when things don't go so well. Sydney.
All right. Our next question is from Jimbo77, who asks, how does Kendall Diggs look so far at the plate?
Well, I think he will tell you that he looks rusty, but I was impressed with how he – I don't know if I'd say I was impressed with how he hit. I was impressed with his control at the plate, his bat control with the plate over the weekend. I think a lot of times when you're coming back from an injury like this, it's easy to, you know, not hit real well. And he didn't have as good of a day on day one. But then day two, he's got a couple of hits. Day three, he's 1-for-1 with a couple of walks, had a big RBI double during that one. So I think that he's handling the bat pretty well. It seems like the labrum injury is behind him. With him, he's dealing with a little bit of a hamstring right now that's keeping him from running whenever he comes out of the, you know, whenever he hits, and he'll just kind of, you know, jog down to first base. And, you know, if it goes to the fence like the RBI double did the other day, you just say, hey, that would have been a double, and you place his pinch runner on second. So I think the shoulder's fine. I think right now he's got to get over this leg injury, which isn't supposed to be – I don't think they're real concerned about it, but you know, obviously it's something that's hindering him a little bit.
All right. Third question is from Mark M, who asks, do we have a closer or two? And I mean an actual closer.
Yeah, that's always the question. I think Christian Fouts is the closer right now. I was impressed with what I saw from him in the fall. I was impressed with what I saw from him last week. We know he can throw gas. When he came in and pitched against Florida last year, to close down that series, he threw 7 pitches, all of over 100 miles an hour. And I think he had one top out at 101.3. This is kind of like Arkansas's version of Ben Joyce at Tennessee a few years ago. I think you're going to see some real eye-popping velocity with him this year. The key with Christian is that, Ethan, he's got a secondary pitch now. And that's the key in the SEC. Everybody can hit a fastball. Now, you might be able to blow it by him, but at some point in time, they are going to catch up with your fastball. The really good hitters are. And so that's what I think is key with him, is the fact that he's got secondary pitches now that he can throw.
Yeah, it's always, you know, the guys that can, like you said, straight gas that can throw it in there, but then change it up and drop some of the velocity off and make people look like fools.
We were shooting a picture of Christian the other day for our baseball preview magazine. And I wanted to set a ball on fire, but then I was afraid we might, you know, injure him, and I didn't know that that would go too well. So we don't have that picture. But, I mean, he has got as electric an arm as I've seen come through here. And there have been other pitchers who can run it up there, but they can't find the strike zone consistently. And he for the most part, has been able to with that fastball. And I think that's what has set him apart. I think he could have a really nice year for them. And I think he could be a really big draft pick come July. Gage Wood, I could see him maybe closing some games too. I could see maybe Landon Beidelschies, which of those two doesn't start. I could see them on the back end as well. You know, the thing is, I don't know that Fouts is going to be able to close every game. And so you got to have some other reliable guys on the back end.
All right. Your final question is from Suey Squad, who asks, in your opinion, what would be the best way to expand seating at Baumwalker Stadium?
Ooh, boy. So this is always a topic of conversation is, you know, should they expand seating at Baum, number one? And if they do, where would you put the seats? Let's touch on number one first. Should they expand the seating? I don't know that you're going to see them do that for a couple of reasons. Number one, the House settlement, I mean, has put everything on hold from a building standpoint. And so it would be very surprising to see them expand that stadium anytime soon, just based on that alone. Number two, I get the feeling that Hunter Yurecek wants to have a really tight supply and demand where you can have, you know, higher ticket costs. They've gone up on their ticket prices again at baseball, I think, this year. I think I have that right, that baseball ticket costs are a little bit higher than they were last year. But, you know, you have supply and demand. That's what you want as a team. And I think they've got that at Baum. Sure, could you get another 3,000-4,000? I think you could build Baum out to 20,000. And come regional, super regional weekends, when you have them there, you could fill every seat in that ballpark. The question is, number one, is that financially feasible? No, it's not. But the other one is, like, could you fill that ballpark for the rest of the year? And no, you can't. I mean, you might sell 10,000 season tickets, but, you know, on average, they may only have about 4,500 to 5,000 a game because, yes, you get your big SEC weekends, you know, but you also get your February 18th games when it's 30 degrees outside and it's parents and girlfriends night at the ballpark. So it's a balance. I don't think they're going to add on to the stadium anytime soon.
Yeah, if they were going to, which I don't think they would. I mean, whatever to do to preserve the hog pen as it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess those bleachers in the back, you could probably build those up.
You can take the bleachers. That's the other part of this question is, you know, where would you add on? And I think there is a way. I wish I had a picture to show you of this. Because the guy who asked this question, he actually sent me this ballpark too. Dell Diamond in Round Rock. It's a AAA ballpark right outside of Austin. They've got a grass berm area in left field that looks, you know, comparable to what you've got in Baum. But then they've got like a set of stadium seats behind that. And so I think that would be maybe the next thing that you could do at Baum is I think there's some area back at the back of the hog pen where you could build some like a seating structure.
Yeah. Whatever you can do to make sure you preserve the tradition of like the hog pen and stuff, but without, I mean, there's always upgrades to be made, but you got to try and preserve the things that have been tradition, in my opinion. So
you could always build an upper deck on top of the suites. That would be something, wouldn't it?
Look like a monster. Well, there monstrous up there.
There aren't a lot of college parks that have double deckers. A&M's got one. It looks really cool when you're in the stadium. But the difference in theirs is that you don't have that level of suites in between the lower and the upper deck. It would be a lot taller at Arkansas if you did that. So I think that would be the last case scenario in terms of building.
My thing is less about right now the more seating there, and it's more less about more seating, more about where you're putting your people. I mean, I saw the Texas A&M Arkansas series last year, and just the way that students were
They affected the game.
That's my bigger thing. It's like, where are you putting – you get enough people in that ballpark, I think. It's just, where are they at?
And all the students are pushed out to the hog pen. They can affect the game from out there, but not quite like they can from the seats. Well, today you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscriptions come with 20-plus issues to our Hogs Illustrated magazine and complete access to all of our content at our website, wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. Join now, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509. Call now, subscribe now. You can get our baseball preview magazine that we are finishing up right now. Just got the proof of that magazine yesterday. It is really, really cool looking, and we can't wait to get that into your hands. When we come back, a little bit of football talk, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. There is a Razorback tie in the Super Bowl this year. It's not a former player playing in the game. You know, we've had that happen a number of times. Dre Greenlaw, of course, a game he probably would love to forget last year, playing at the Super Bowl. But he and Brandon Allen were on the 49ers roster. Are there any Razorbacks on the Chiefs roster? And so that has, you know, I mean, they're there all the time now. So that's, you know, I guess maybe affected a little bit the number of players that can play in this game. But Jeremiah Washburn is a defensive line coach for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he is a former player for the Razorbacks. He lettered at Arkansas from 1997 to 99. His father was Jim Washburn, who was a defensive line coach for the Razorbacks under Danny Ford in the mid-1990s. So Jeremiah Washburn coaching in the Super Bowl for the second time. He also was on the Philadelphia staff when they lost to the Chiefs a couple of years ago. So there is a tie. It's just it's a different kind of former player tie.
Yeah, it's like you said, the Chiefs already, every year it's, you get one team to choose from if there's going to be Razorbacks on it, because you can, at this point you just expect the Chiefs to be there, and we know they don't have any. I am bummed that we could have had the Jason and Travis Kelce Super Bowl, but Jason is no longer playing, so.
Well, you got that 2 years ago.
Well, we could have had it again with Taylor Swift in the mix, too.
Okay. Who are you for? Are you for the Eagles or the Chiefs?
You know, I don't really care for either too much, but I really would like to see somebody else win. So I think I'll go for if the Eagles will bust out the Kelly Green uniforms,
they're not
I will.
Going to. You know, they have to the NFL. You have to wear what is designated as your primary uniform in these games. You cannot pull out something new or alternate.
Well, that's a shame, because if we could have Kelly Green uniforms out there, I'd cheer for them. Those are awesome. Those are the best uniforms in the NFL, in my opinion.
As a Cowboys fan, I can't pull for the Eagles, but I'm sick of the Chiefs.
Yeah, it's
like I wanted the Bills to beat the Chiefs so bad the other night, because I just wanted to see something. And look, Kansas City, they're great. I have a lot of respect for what they're doing. I'm just tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see something different, and that's. I feel like in the NFL we've gotten into the cycle over the last – what was the text I sent you the other day? Something like the last 25 AFC championship games have included either Mahomes, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like for all of the push for parity in the NFL, you're still left with these same teams that are, the teams that are right there at the end.
When the Lions were eliminated, the real loser was America, because that was the team that we were all, if you're against the dynasties, we were all ready to see them win a Super Bowl. But then, of course, they did not play very well against the Commanders.
Speaking of football in the NFL, you got seven football former Razorbacks who are going to compete in All-Star games this week. Five of them are in the East-West Shrine Bowl, which is going to be Thursday night, tomorrow night, at AT&T Stadium down in Arlington, and then there will be two more who play in the Senior Bowl on Saturday. That'll be in Mobile, Alabama. The Shrine Bowl's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, the Senior Bowl at 1:30 on Saturday afternoon, and both of those games are going to be on NFL Network. From this last year's team, you've got Eric Gregory and Jaquindon Jackson in the Shrine Bowl. This is the 100th year of the Shrine Bowl, by the way. Then you've got three former Razorbacks in that game, too. Players who transferred away from Arkansas, I mean. Chris Paul, the Ole Miss linebacker. Rocket Sanders from South Carolina. And UNLV linebacker Jackson Woodard, who was the Defensive Player of the Year in his conference. And so all of those will be playing at the Shrine Bowl. And then in the Senior Bowl on Saturday, you've got Isaac Tesla and you've got Landon Jackson.
Yeah, these games are always just, you know, I don't know how to like much stock to put in them. I feel like it's more just an honor at this point. But it's cool that Isaac Tesla got invited to one of those, I think, because he's a guy that...
Especially to the Senior Bowl, because that's I mean, I think of all of these, the Senior Bowl's the most prestigious.
Yeah. And the thing is, he really, down the stretch for Arkansas this year, was... He was a guy that you look back in hindsight and you're like, he should have been at the very start with Armstrong out there, I think, like in a very lead role. Landon, he was their high top, their number one touchdown guy, I think.
Landon Jackson is rated by Mel Kiper as the number three defensive end in this draft class, and Chris Paul is rated as the number three off-ball linebacker. And so those are probably a couple of second-day draft picks. coming up here later this year. I want to tell you, too, Jordan Anthony from the football team, he's going to start his track season, his indoor season at the Razorback Invitational. You can read something about that at our website right now at wholehogsports.com. I had a chance to talk to him and his track coaches recently. They think he's going to be a big scorer for them this year in track and field. Also, we've got a story on our website right now. SEC baseball teams are going to be prohibited from using electronic devices on offense this year. They cannot use these wristwatches anymore to call bunts and hit and runs and stolen bases, things like that. And so kind of an interesting thing. You can read about that on our website, too, at wholehogsports.com. Be back with another podcast tomorrow. We appreciate you being with us. Hope we see you at our website, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.